takes courage and confidence to show the world who you really are. And that's just how today's guest, Nina Magan, runs her interior design business. With an Entrepreneur of the Year title, a number of award-winning lifestyle product collections, and a book showcasing her unique style, clearly something is working. Learn about Nina's design philosophy, how she grew her business, and the mindset that keeps her always improving. Listen on for all of this and more.
How are you?
I'm good.
I've seen you for a long time.
I know. The last time I think was at Universal. We had a quick chat when we were in the cafeteria.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think that was because that collection launched in 2019.
Wow. Has it really been that long?
Yeah. So it's been like 5 years.
Wow. Oh my God. Well, you have been on a roll. Oh my gosh. Well, it's so great to reconnect with you. We just realized that we hadn't seen each other in about 5 years. And it has been a while and you've been so busy. I've been following you on LinkedIn. It's been like a steady progression of just one post after another about all the things you've accomplished. So how are you doing this?
You know, it's been a long progression, but I have a fantastic team who is very supportive. And so they have given me the ability to be more of a visionary. And so that we can kind of grow the company and then they can handle the operational part.
That's great. How many are on your team now?
So right now we are 21. And so we have an office in San Fran and then we have an office here and we're opening up an office in Austin.
Okay, great. Well, here meaning Houston. Some of the people may not know your right now, which is great. Well, and you are, I really can appreciate your background. You have a Bachelor of Science in Economics and Finance. I have a finance degree too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Okay.
That was my first degree. And then I went back and got a design degree later. So you also did postgraduate in architecture and design. So let's talk about that a little bit and talk about how this has helped and which one has helped you the most in building your brand and maybe your business.
So, you know, I think that obviously a business is a business. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. I think being a business major is obviously a huge plus point. And, you know, I have to say that my finance background has helped me a lot. I did take management classes in college as well. And so it's given me kind of like this macro vision for a business because there's so many creative people out there. You know, I always tell this story. I went to Piazza in Rome and, you know, there were so many talented artists there that have this immense talent in terms of art. But if you don't apply business to it, then you never really go anywhere with that talent. And so I do think that having the business background was probably one of the smartest things that I did. I was forced to do it by my family, but I think it was one of the smartest things that I actually did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that tells me that your brain is divided between left and right.
It is for sure.
Which is great. And it's also for those of us that are those dual dominant brains, it's exhausting sometimes.
Yes, it really is.
Because you're thinking on both sides for everything. There is no simple conversation with yourself about what you're doing.
Well, I think what happens is that, you know, we think people like me, or maybe even like you, I think what happens is we think, no, we want to focus on the business. And then we focus on the business. And then we think, no, I want to be more focused on the creative side. And so there's this constant ping pong in our head of which is more important, because they're both equally important for people who think like us.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think a lot of people struggle with that. And there's so many people that get into it and say, well, it was an afterthought that I got into business, but you can't have it as an afterthought, because it's really 90% of what you do every day is your business.
Correct.
And the creative part is about 10%. So it's understanding that, it's just hard to balance that. And yes, in order to be more creative, you have to be really good at business.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%, because it is a business. We are in the business of interior design, but it's a business at the end of the day. And if we want to make money, we have to run it as a business.
Mm-hmm. it's very interesting because you've built such a big team and a big company. And I'm sure that your husband, your kids, they're all supportive of what you're doing. Did your husband have any idea what you were about to accomplish or where you might go with your business?
So he knows that I have very big dreams. I'm a big visionary, right? And so I remember when we first got married, I did tell him that I want to be something bigger than ordinary. What that means is I still don't know what that means, right? But I just feel like there's something that's calling me to do something much bigger than what I am. And it could be a vision, it could be a want, it could be a desire. I don't know. So he's known this from the beginning. And it's funny because he thinks I'm the type of person who's never satisfied, which is true to some degree, is that, you know, you have a win and then I want more and I want more. And you can call it greed or you can call it ambition. I don't know what it is, but he's known this about me since the very beginning.
Well, what if we pick the word achievement?
Yeah.
I think that's it. That's a pretty positive word for, I think you just are an achiever. You just have this need to continue to build. And I do want to get into all the facets of your business. And I think what caused me to reach out to you was I had just gotten a copy of your book. And I thought, I would love to have everybody get a copy of your book for sure.
Yeah.
And that's Evoke. It just came out a couple of months ago.
September, during New York Fashion Week.
Oh, well, of course, because you love fashion.
Yes.
So your interest in fashion and design, architecture and business, you've got all of these things going on. So how did you get started with some of the brand expansions when you got into designing products? How did that happen?
Actually, the first one is where I saw you, which is Universal. You know, I was on a panel at Universal, and it was in 2018, I was on a panel at Universal, and I was speaking with Nick May, who had at that time the Chase Lounge. I'm not sure if he still has it,
No, he doesn't.
Okay. So, and he had a painting company and I know that was doing really well, but anyways, so we were on a panel together and he was the moderator and I had met Neil McKenzie and Jeff, who at that time was the CEO of Universal. And right after the panel, I ended up speaking to them. And you know, they said, hey, tell us more about this European style that you were speaking about when you were on the panel. And, you know, is that something, what is your proposal for us? And I said, well, I think we should do a European style of design and bring something like that to High Point that is lower seating, more curves, etc. And, you know, that was supposed to be a designer only collection. And then it turned into a full consumer collection for retail. And it did very well. There's still pieces that are there today. But that was the first collection that I ever did, which was in 2019. And then that launched in 2019. And then after that, there's been several that I'm actually working on contracts with right now.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. And I think there are a lot of people that might have an interest in developing products. So what are some of the things that they should know if they want to do that? How do you go about doing that? How do you get a manufacturer to consider working with you and designing a line?
Well, you know, I think that first of all, you have to buy from that company. If you're a loyal designer to that company who's buying product and specifying product from them, then it becomes much easier because they understand that you already believe in the brand. And then, you know, you can just ask. It's really funny because I'm very straightforward and I ask everybody for everything. And 50% I'm told no, and 50% I'm told yes, you know, and so that's a pretty good success rate, in my opinion. And sometimes you just have to ask. And, you know, another thing that we did for product was during COVID. You know, a lot of us are working from home. We, you know, one of the assignments we had slowed down at the beginning of COVID for those first 3 to 6 months. It was a little slower in the office because clients weren't meeting with us for obvious reasons. We weren't able to go anywhere to go pick up samples. We were just kind of stuck. And so I had told the entire team, let's design a marble collection. Let's design a dinnerware collection and let's design some pieces of furniture. And then maybe when all of this lifts, we can actually present it to somebody. We even did lighting. And that's exactly what happened. As soon as all of this lifted, one of the first things I did was present my marble collection to Bergdorf Goodman. Because I already had it. It was already there. We had already designed it. Everything was done. And they said yes. And so my marble collection is currently being sold at Bergdorf. And also during COVID, we created a lighting collection and then we presented it to Studio M. They picked it up. It was already done. So the process of the actual development phase went by so quickly. I think I had shown it to them in March, if I'm not mistaken, and the product was showing in New York in, I think it was November. The product was already created and done and being presented in November in New York. And so, I think that there's so many ways to do it. If you already have something to present, it makes it so much easier because they can understand your vision immediately. But the great thing about product development in my situation has been that I am trying at this point to turn ourselves into a brand. Right. And to do that, if you're collaborating with the right collaborators or the right manufacturers who do a lot of marketing and advertising, then it's a great way to promote yourself, not only as a collaboration, but also for people to understand who you are and what your name is.
Mm. Well, you've taken it further. I noticed that you're starting to do development work now as well.
So yeah.
Talk about that.
So I don't know, a lot of people don't know this, but I come from a real estate family background of multifamily real estate. And so, one of my dreams was that since I didn't join the family business, I think I want to do my own developments because I love ground up construction because for me, it's really exciting to take something from nothing. And I think that's why I love design so much is you take these blank canvases and you create something that comes out of your mind. And the development part is, so I just started building 19 townhomes. 4 of them are already completed and they're kind of under the Nina Megan name. So, from the countertops to the light fixtures, they're all part of my collaborations. Even the furniture that's in the show suite is our furniture. I think that's very exciting to see a townhome development that is essentially product, which includes product that was designed by us.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Well, you're definitely working on world domination, which is something I love that. And are there other big things that you have in your vision for your future?
I think right now we are in talks with so many people. I have a lot of NDAs that have been signed, but, I'm really looking for those big name collaborations, whether they be in fashion or in our industry. I want to collaborate with people who really believe in our vision, believe in my vision, and they understand what it is that I'm trying to do, because I have come across a lot of negativity, like people, what is she doing? Why does she have fashion pictures of herself in the book? What is the purpose of this? But for anyone who really understands me, they would understand that I was in fashion before I went to interior design. Fashion has always been my motivating factor. And what's interesting is every major fashion brand is doing home collections now. And fashion and interiors are just kind of, they're just melding into each other.
And okay. Well, it's clear from reading the book and also seeing the photos, and I've seen several photos prior to the book being launched too. So I think that is such a natural for people to be interested in fashion and then go into design. And I think some of the best designers out there, like you, are those people that come from that background with the interest in fashion. And I think, and I am curious to know how many of your clients come to you because they actually enjoy fashion too, and that's why they come to you.
Well, I think that many of them are interested in fashion. I also think that many of them, I think that they relate to us in terms of luxury. They understand our love for luxury. They understand, you know, that we're looking for out of the box thinking, but still looks, has a very luxe taste. And, you know, I say this in all my interviews, our design business is so subjective because what is beautiful to someone may not be beautiful to somebody else. And so, you know, it's just trying to attract that target market that understands what your vision is and what your company is doing.
So as you were growing your business, you weren't always 21 people. So when you were starting the business, how did you get your first clients? Just share with us your journey and how you figured out how to market correctly to get to those ideal clients.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I used to be a traditionalist where I liked, because I'm from Texas, so I like that Mediterranean modern look, or just Mediterranean traditional with the tassels and, you know, March Carson furniture and stuff like that. Yeah. And so when I first got exposed to interior design, that was one of the first styles that I liked. And I quickly transitioned because of a teacher that I had at the Art Institute who explained to me why concrete buildings are so beautiful and, you know, what is the beauty of minimalism and modern design. And so, you know, I went more into the modern side then, and then I came back and added some glam and, you know, until we finally came upon what we are and what our aesthetic is, which is this forward thinking modern, but it has this touch of glamour to it because that's kind of who I am. And, you know, that's how the style evolved in terms of like the first project that I did. It was, you know, I remember doing a friend's bathroom. I was lucky enough that one of our friends believed in me to renovate their house. So, you know, I did, it was like carpet and some paint and a kitchen, picking up some tiles for the kitchen. So it was kind of simple, but, you know, it was something to at least start building a portfolio. And then obviously I went on the television show a couple of years later. And then after the show, I got 5115 and Saks Fifth Avenue, the restaurant. And then from there, you know, I learned a lot on the job. And I know some people don't want to say that, but I learned a lot from doing it. More than anything else. When I was forced into situations, it caused me to change. It caused me to learn. It's like this instant force where do or die, right? So either you perform or you don't perform. And either you win or you lose in a very big way. And that was always in my head. I remember when we were doing 5115 in Saks, I didn't sleep for days because I'd never done a restaurant before. It was our first time. And, you know, I was scared out of my mind that, hey, this is a newly renovated Saks Fifth Avenue in Houston. This is a totally new restaurant from zero, from scratch. And what happens if people don't like it? There's always that fear, you know, and it did well. It did really well. And it built my confidence. And I think part of this journey has been confidence building because, you know, it's hard to be accepted being in a creative field. Not everyone likes what you do. You get criticized a lot and you get knocked down quite a bit. So every little win that you have, it's building confidence to take it that extra step or to move ahead. At this point in my career, if people don't like what I do, it doesn't affect me as much as it did before. I remember losing sleep many times if someone didn't like something that I did. And now, you know, through experience and all of these years, I'm in a very different situation.
Well, that's really well said. I think a lot of people have this feeling that they don't like to hear the criticism, but that's how you grow anyway.
Yeah.
And if you can accept it and not be turned away by it, mm-hmm. and not give up because of it, I think you really find out what you're made of, which yeah. leads people to much greater success than if they didn't have that.
Of course. And I can tell you honestly, Gail, I hate change. Mm-hmm. I hate really? It. Passion. Yeah. And it's like, I can't function at night. It gives me anxiety. But it keeps on happening. Change keeps on happening. It's inevitable. And every time there's change that happens or I'm forced to be put in these uncomfortable situations, I grow from them. And even though I hate them, in hindsight, I can say I do grow from them. Because like I'll tell you, being on that television show is probably the most frightful thing I've ever done in my life. And, you know, having a sound guy and a cameraman following you everywhere. You can't even go to the bathroom without them following you. Like, especially since I didn't have the experience that some of the other people on the show had, it was terrifying for me. And I remember trying to come home and just forfeit on the show because I didn't want to be on it anymore, because it was so difficult for me to be on that television show. But when I talk about that show now, it changed my entire life, not because I was on a television show, but because it helped me grow as a person. And it gave me the confidence that I was lacking before the show. Mm.
So would you ever identify that you had imposter syndrome?
Oh, all the time. I still have imposter syndrome. I still have it.
For being real about that.
Yeah.
I think people think, oh, she's got this big name and she has a book and she's got
fans.
And I think people just assume that once you get to that level, that you must have always had that confidence and that you had that belief in yourself that you were really good. And I love that you shared that.
Yeah, no, negative. All of that is untrue. You know, I had to build my confidence. It's been, even now I have insecurities. I don't know anybody who doesn't have insecurities. I have a lot of insecurities, you know, and it's every day talking to yourself. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. You know, even when I did my book, I was scared. Like, are people going to like this book? Are they going to think it's foolish? You know, I have an iridescent cover. Are people going to like, because I'm trying to make it different? You know, it's just, but if you don't try and be yourself, then how are you ever going to know? And at the end of the day, I've also learned that it's not about other people. It's about you. Mm-hmm. You know, what makes me happy? What is, how am I reflecting my image to the world? Whether it's accepted or not, this is me.
Well, I think you said it very well, because honestly, that's what people are attracted to. So when there's a brand, if you're Taylor Swift, people are attracted to her as a person because she really does show who she is on the inside. It's very authentic. And I think you are too, in the way you come across. So let's go backwards a little bit and let's talk a little bit about inspiration, because obviously fashion is huge for you and business is huge for you. Yeah. Travel. Talk about some of your favorite places, some of the things that were the most inspiring in the last few years in your design.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, and I talk about this in my book, that when I was younger, I used to travel to India because both of my parents are from Delhi. And so we used to travel to India every single summer from Canada. And we would take a different route. Sometimes we would go through, like one time we went through China, one time we went through London, one time we went through Frankfurt. And then when Dubai opened up and started becoming popular, that was the most, that was the best flight to travel through, because it's a direct flight to Dubai and then Dubai, Delhi. And, you know, every time I went to all these different countries, I was exposed to a lot. And I would wonder as a kid, why do they speak different? Because I would go, say, from London to Delhi or from Germany to Delhi. And in Germany, everybody's tall. They look different, right? You go to India, they look different. They have dark hair. They speak a different language. And I would wonder, why does everyone speak? They look different. They talk different. What's going on here, right? And I couldn't understand it at a young age. But as I got older, I realized that there's so much beauty to the entire world. You know, traveling to the Taj Mahal at a very young age, even going to all the Hindu temples in Delhi, they are incredible, incredible. Going to the hotels like the Taj in Delhi and seeing just even how the hotels operate, the level of service that they give to their clientele. I was a very observant kid, and I would even realize that, you know, when we went on cruises, the level of service that you're getting on a cruise boat, and they're all so happy. And, you know, it's just, it's a learning experience all around. It's not just about design. It's about humanity and how people are and how to be thankful for things. And, you know, it was kind of like this all encompassing experience of learning. Mm.
Well, that's interesting. And so something that you said, I think has been maybe a passion for me, is finding out about client service and that ultimate experience that people can have. And how have you brought that into your firm?
You know, We're trying. We're still trying because it's an everyday type of thing. You know, dealing with clients is sometimes difficult because every single client has a different personality. They come from a different financial background. And so, you know, they might be mixed racial marriages and, you know, one person likes this, the wife likes something else. And so we deal with this every single day. And I think that it's interesting to find out what works for everybody from a luxurious point of view that, okay, when people walk in, you have to ask them immediately, can I get you some water? Can I get you coffee? Can I get you tea? Can we order you anything to eat? Depending on what time it is, you know, because a lot of people, they're picking up their kids from school or they're dropping off kids from school. And so one of the things that we've always, every single person in this office asks when they get seated, is there anything we can get you to drink, eat? You know, just to make them feel comfortable. We also have wine in our office now, you know, for a happy hour. If someone comes at 4 o'clock, do you want a glass of wine? Right. And so these little things do make a difference. And even going to job sites, answering our phone whenever the client calls can be a good thing or a bad thing. But we are trying our best to give that extra level of service that other design firms don't give. And sometimes it also backfires for us because clients are calling at 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday. Or they have expected this certain level of luxury this entire time. And then if there is any disagreement and we are actually right, it's difficult to not have that same luxury experience saying yes, 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 because that's what we've done the entire time when we feel like there's something that's not right, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds as if you do say no occasionally.
No, we've actually started saying no more now. But I think that if you set the level of expectation and you are consistent with that throughout the process, then you don't run into these issues. And before we were yes, 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 yes all the time. And now we've come to realize that that doesn't work. You know, as long as you can be a yes person, but you have to set very clear expectations so that everybody understands how we work from the beginning.
Well, I think that's really important. And today, I don't know about you, but I certainly hear a lot from my clients who are telling me that their clients who are very wealthy are more demanding and more difficult than they've ever been. Are you finding that to be true?
You know, to some degree, yes. We've been able to manage them at some point. I mean, some more than others. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily the super wealthy clients. It's sometimes the ones that we call rich clients. And they're the ones that are actually sometimes more difficult than the very wealthy ones because they're nitpicking on every little thing. Or the best thing is they try to shop around. When we give them the design, they do that shop around. So we actually have it in our contract now that this is our intellectual property. No shop around is allowed. And if we find out that you purchased, you actually have to pay us our procurement percentage that is per our contract.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. It has really been hard for so many people and they get so frustrated by it. And I think you almost have to be at that point of understanding it's the internet world.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to go online. They can't help it. They're intrigued by what they can get and getting a better deal. So of course they're going to shop.
That's why we had to add that in our contract because I understand I would do it too. Like I totally understand it. But the thing that they're getting with us is they're also getting a design. And that design is not possible without us selecting those particular furniture pieces for this project. They wouldn't get that same result if they were just to go to a store and buy it themselves.
Absolutely true. So in working with people that are, maybe you have projects overseas, I'm sure you have several. How have you found that to be challenging or easy? What has been your experience with that?
So, you know, we worked in Abu Dhabi for a very prominent family there. And, you know, I think the main thing is just seeing what is available over there in terms of product. If you're doing soft finishes, even in terms of hard finishes, what is available? What are the delivery times? You know, how easily available is everything to come over there? I mean, most of the places that we've worked, they have everything. The only place that we've worked so far where we have to spec a lot of materials has been in Cabo, because we're shipping things from the United States and there's a tax implication on that. And so we're learning kind of as we go. But I think most of the places now around the world where we work, everything is pretty much available or it can be shipped there. It's very different than it was, say, 10 years ago. Things have become much more available everywhere, besides this tax implication that we're trying to figure out, because every single country is different.
I can only imagine that. That's a little challenging.
Yeah.
Are you doing much design anymore?
I am. You know, every day I'm involved in some kind of design. I'm a little bit of a micromanager and my team hates that about me, but I am always walking through the office and I glance at people's work. And I just say, I like this. I don't like this. I know it annoys them, but I told them if I don't like something, you just have to take it out. Right. But I do have an amazing creative director who's been with me for 10 years and she understands my eye and we both think very similar. And so I make sure that she signs off on everything. And then if it comes to my desk for whatever reason, and there's something I don't like, I'll ask her first to give her the respect that, are you okay if I make this change? But usually she's pretty good. And yeah, I do involve myself. Like, we just had a restaurant that recently opened here in Houston, and I was very involved in that restaurant. So it also depends on the client and the project. I can obviously not be involved in every project because we run about 40 something projects at a time. Mm. And so it's difficult for me to be involved in every project, but the ones that I have the most interest in, I am more involved in.
Great. Well, and I would assume at 21 people, you probably have a leadership group as well.
Yeah. Yes. I have a managing director. I have a creative director. I have a business developer. And then I have an outside, he's an advisor, attorney / he is steering my business into a different direction.
Oh, that's awesome to have all those people. So finding those people isn't always so easy to do.
No, it's not. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But having that team gives you that freedom to do, like you said, the visionary work.
Yeah. But this is only recently. Like, I would probably say this team has only been fully established in probably the last 8 months.
Wow.
Yeah, I had to. And the reason why I got forced to do it was because I was on book tour. And so I had no choice but now to make that implementation and make the change and remove myself from the daily operations.
There comes that point. You can't do it all. And you can't have 21 people reporting to you.
Yeah, no. And I don't anymore. I actually don't talk to some of them at all, because there are other people who talk to them. There's no need for me because sometimes my input is not wanted or warranted. So, yeah.
Well, that's a good recognition as well. So awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's end up today with just three takeaways that you would suggest that our listeners take from this conversation. Things that you thought were interesting that came up as part of our conversation, what would you like to share?
You know, I think that one of the main things is that you have to, whatever it is that you believe in, don't copy anybody. Just do what you like and do what you believe in and whatever style that is. If it is traditional, then it's traditional. You know, whatever it is, just believe in it and move forward. Because that's something that I had to really focus on, because here in Texas, everyone likes Mediterranean. And so I was going against the grain during like ultra modern stuff. And people were like, what is this? But that's what I love, right? Because if you don't like doing it, then there's no purpose to any of this, especially being in a creative field. But the second takeaway would be, you know, you have to work on yourself. And I know that sounds crazy, but without having self-awareness and self-reflection, you can never be successful. Just because you don't know how to communicate, or what you're communicating maybe not being received properly. And so that self-awareness is super important, which includes meditation, like just self-awareness, self-focus, I think is super important. It has nothing to do with your business, but it helps in so many ways. And then I think the third part is you have to learn to let go if you want to grow. If you can't let go, then it's better to stay smaller and run everything the way you want, because sometimes growth doesn't necessarily mean more money, because you're paying everybody out of the company. And so it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make more money immediately. It doesn't translate the way people think it does. And so if you feel like you're making good money and you want to stay small, then that's what you should do. If you want to grow, because growing also has a lot of headaches that I'm dealing with right now. And so, you know, you just have to decide what is it that you want to do. And I'm sure like some of this stuff is redundant. Other people might have said it before, but I mean, these are kind of my experiences of what I've gone through.
I think they're great experiences to share. And I appreciate you being so open and candid and sharing that you had imposter syndrome too. So
yeah, a lot. I mean, think about it. It's an Indian girl who's 5'3", who is entering into this, you know, Italian world of design, where you can only name a few women off the top of your head, like Zaha Hadid, Patrizia Arcola, you know, not a lot of women, and Patrizia Arcola is Italian, you know, so trying to enter into this unknown territory is difficult and very challenging.
You've done it well, and it's so much fun to watch you just explode with your brand, and congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Nina, for joining Gail on the podcast. We hope you're feeling inspired to push your business to the next level through confidence and courage. Stay tuned for the next episode of the podcast, and make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast provider if you haven't already.